This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson, and I want to welcome a member of Rochester City Council, Malik Evans, who is on the line with us now. Malik, welcome. How are you?
Hey, Evan. How are you?
Well, pretty good. You know, it's an active, interesting time, in many ways a tragic time, but also in many ways a time where I think a lot of communities are looking at possible change. And I think we've got a lot to talk about here in a lot of different directions. What's keeping you the busiest these days?
What's keeping me the busiest is that, you know, I chair the Rochester City Council's Finance Committee.
Yep.
And I've been in government for a while, both as a staffer, intern, and as an elected official. And I can tell you that this has been the most challenging budget that I have seen ever. And I think that budget directors and people throughout the community that work in these areas of finance would absolutely agree with me. You know, we started pre-COVID with blockbuster growth. Our sales tax revenue was through the roof. We were meeting all our expectations. And then within a couple of minutes, it was almost, it seemed as if it was just a minute later, we saw, a drop of 25% in sales tax revenue, and it threw budget planning completely out the window, not only in the existing budget of 1920, but also planning for next year's 2021 budget. So a lot to deal with and a lot to balance as we look at moving towards passing a city budget.
Do we have a raw number, a general idea right now over the hit that COVID-19 has put on this budget in terms of revenue?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's in the millions of dollars. I mean, even in the current fiscal year, we're currently, the city's budget year starts July 1st. And even in this current fiscal year, we're talking millions of dollars, close to $20 million that we had to pull out of rainy day. So, I mean, close to that number, and that was a direct result. Monroe County sales tax, which the city is very much dependent on, I believe it was down 24%. I think we forecasted that the COVID hit would be 25%. And then in this coming year, this new budget year, which will be 2020-21, the projected is about 15%, which is massive, which we hope that number would be much lower, but we're looking at about a 15% possible sales tax cut, which is a major source of our revenue. And then we're also looking at, because the federal government still has not gotten its act together in terms of providing aid to municipalities and states, we could possibly get a 20% cut in state revenue, but we won't know that for some time, and that can happen in the 2021 budget also. So we are dealing with unprecedented times. And I should mention, because of the social distancing guidelines, we're working on this budget virtually. So our meetings, a lot of our conversations are virtual because the coronavirus has not disappeared. So we are seeing things that we have not seen, but we have an obligation to still try to soldier on and make sure that we keep the fiscal health of the city strong.
Well, forgive this hanging softball I'm about to give you, but I will give this to you because I think it is relevant here. I mean, Governor Andrew Cuomo has spent weeks now railing on the idea that there must be federal intervention, call it whatever you want, call it relief, aid, bailout, to states and local governments, because as he says, they're the only ones who can either print money or deficit spend. We can't, and we are, you know, you can do everything that you want with a federal relief package, with small business loans, et cetera, but if every local government in the country, state, city, county, is cutting anywhere from 5, 10, 15, 20, 25%, we're going to have a massive recession. Do you agree with that?
Absolutely. We will absolutely have a massive recession. You have to remember that, for example, the city of Rochester alone employs over 3,000 employees. Brighton, Irondequoit, Monroe County, the state of New York, they employ lots of people that spend on goods and services. If you have to lay those people off, you're basically shutting down and turning off the economy. There's that end. And then you can't tax your way out of the situation. Are you going to raise taxes by 50% on people who are already out of work or furloughed? So you have to look at it on that end. And we talk about the importance of education. These cuts also are not just for municipalities. The cuts that the state would have to make, around 20%, are also for local school districts. So then you have to have that end. The Rochester City School District is also a large employer, as is other large school districts across the country. So it would be a ball of disaster that we would be unleashing if we don't look at providing relief to states and municipalities. And this is not a bailout. This is not because people have misspent their money. Rochester, for example, has a great bond rating. It's not because there was any malfeasance or misappropriations of funds. It was because we had an invisible illness that has devastated the United States and the world. So that needs to be taken into consideration in Washington. And as far as I'm concerned, they need to do it as soon as possible, or we are going to start seeing further damage to our overall economy. And it's going to happen at a time when we are already dealing with so many challenges as a country.
Let me say, I think that's actually a fair distinction, the phraseology there. This would not really be a bailout, because I think, to the member of council's point, we think of bailouts as, you know, an auto industry that maybe was poorly positioned, a banking industry that did all kinds of nefarious things and still got billions of dollars. This is, I do agree that it's different. I mean, nobody sprung this pandemic in the city of Rochester and you know, was sort of lazy or negligent about it. So I certainly take that point. But let's assume that help doesn't come, Malik. What are the kinds of cuts that are possible? Give me sort of the menu of options that you will have if you've got to make these big cuts.
Across the board and everything, fire, EMS, police, recreation, refuse. I mean, we will have to get creative. But as the governor said, we can't deficit spend. We have to have a balanced budget, and our state city charter says that you can only spend money that is in the pot. We can't go out, and we have a constitutional debt limit, and you can't raise taxes out of this situation. But you know, that might even have to be an option, which would probably be the last option, because people are taxed enough already. So life in the city, and I think even I can't speak for the county, but even probably in the county would look differently because the services that a lot of us take for granted, we just assume these things happen, you know. But it doesn't happen in a vacuum. It takes money to make it happen. So it probably would be broken into buckets of must do. I mean, you have to have firefighters, right? And then should do, and then nice to do. And then what will fall under each of those buckets will be dependent on what the revenue picture looks like. Obviously, we are prepared for the worst, but we hope for the best. And the hope is that we will see some type of relief happening here. The other thing that we did was we delayed some great capital improvement projects. That happens. And you know, when you do that, if we had to delay further capital improvement projects, that then trickles down to the construction industry, which hires lots of people, and that would then also put them out of work, and that could also have a negative effect on infrastructure that is already crumbling. You know, the federal government talked about investing in infrastructure, and that's something that most Democrats and Republicans look at, but we've had not large, significant infrastructure projects, so it's really been left to the locals, and that's something that we have placed a lot of emphasis on. But infrastructure would also be affected if there's not relief and relief soon. So it would not be pretty. I know I sound passionate about this, but I think it's important that we not sugarcoat it, because it is an emergency as far as I'm concerned, and it's something that citizens need to pay attention to, because it's going to affect their daily lives.
Well, and I'll take a phone call in just a second here, but let me just follow that point with Malik Evans, member of Rochester City Council. When you say you view it as an emergency, Governor Cuomo has warned of major cuts in distress. Many county leaders, local leaders, other city leaders, municipal leaders in places across the country have been saying the same thing. And yet, there's two things happening in Washington this week. President Trump is celebrating the Dow, not today, but celebrating the Dow, and saying that the economy is bouncing back stronger than ever, and it's a great week for the country. It's a massive disconnect in terms of what we are seeing. And frankly, Malik, when we see the Dow, it makes no sense to me to see the Dow where it is, given unemployment and given the looming issues that local budgets have. How do you square some of this disconnect that we're seeing there?
Well, I think there's a disconnect, and you have to look at the two differently. You have to look at what is on the ground You know, there's always Main Street and Wall Street. So, yeah, you should track the Dow. You should look at the Dow. You should see what's happening in the Dow. But you have to get on the micro level, on the smaller level, and that's what's happening in cities like Rochester and Buffalo, and towns like Brighton or Greece or Irondequoit, and that's where you really see what's happening. The person that is furloughed because of the current situation through no fault of their own. The person that works in the entertainment industry, where you can't gather 50,000 people or 5,000 people for a gala, or the nonprofit organization that isn't getting the funds that they normally would have because the events aren't taking place because people aren't working and we're in a health pandemic. That's what we need to be looking at, and we have to look at this by a city by city, people by people, block by block conversation. And if we don't do that, we're going to miss out on really providing relief and helping people, and we're going to miss our opportunity, because even when the relief may come, it may come after the cuts have already been made. Mm-hmm. Once the toothpaste is out of a tube, I always tell my kids this when they're brushing their teeth: if you waste the toothpaste, guess what? It's gone. You can't put it back in the tube. And if we waste this moment to be able to help our municipalities as it relates to this financial situation, we may miss an opportunity and do damage that's going to be very hard to recover from. It's already going to take years for us to recover from COVID-19. It doesn't need to be exacerbated by being foolhardy and not coming together to be able to solve a problem that both parties seem to understand is important. The National Governors Association has been clear on this, and that's a bipartisan organization that municipalities and states need relief, and we need relief immediately.
All right, let me grab our first phone call. It's Jane in Rochester, on with member of Rochester City Council Malik Evans. Hi, Jane.
Hi, Evan. Not only Governor Cuomo weighed in on the feds contributing something to help us, but I remember other people also backing that up. One of them was Bill Gates, and he just said point blank, it is federal responsibility in an emergency, you know, to give us what we need. And Mitch McConnell was talking about a stimulus. I don't know where that is right now, but a stimulus again. You know, we keep having these stimuluses, and they keep going to the 1%. And I noticed there was a list of this last one, and Boeing was at the top of the list, if you can imagine, with all their criminal lawsuits, and then also Johnson & Johnson with their criminal lawsuits. So what I'd like to ask your guest is, what can we do on a local level to do our part in pressuring Mitch McConnell and Trump to meet their responsibilities to the states? Thank you very, very much.
Thank you, Jane. Go ahead, Malik.
Thank you. That's a great question. I think that it is very important that you call and that you write the national representatives. Our local representatives have been supportive in pushing for a stimulus, particularly at the state level. Senator Schumer, Senator Gillibrand, Congressman Morelli, they have been pushing for this. But we should write all of those representatives, and I think that the good thing is I think that you won't be alone in this. I think that other states will do the same thing. But just imagine how hard hit New York State is. I mean, other states have also been hit by COVID, but New York State has, New York City in New York State, which has been the epicenter of this, is just, you know, hard to almost put into words the loss that we've seen as a result of this. But making your voices heard, educating other people about this, because, you know, this isn't a topic that a lot of people would understand from, you know, sales tax revenue and how that works. But what people do understand is when you make it about their real lives, when you make it about the prospect of them losing vital services like a recreation center for their child, or a garbage pickup having to be moved to every other week, or only being able to do recycling once a month. People understand that. So when you have conversations with your friends, let them know how they would feel. Or if they're in a school district like Rochester that's already having all types of cuts, if they had to be cut even further because of the situation, so they would lose more teachers. So people understand that on a human element, and I think that we have to put a face to what this would look like come the next month or so if there's not relief.
All right, so let's talk about some of the things that could impact the bottom line here. I understand when there is a national conversation and it becomes a local conversation about defunding police, it doesn't mean eliminate the entire budget and do nothing with it. It often means sort of reappropriate the money in different directions. But I am curious to know if you have affinity towards the defund the police movement, or if you think there's another way to do it.
Yeah, well, first off, let me just say, as an African-American male who lives in America and knows people who have been through interactions with police and my own personal experiences that I've had growing up, right a day before my graduation from college with police, I am uniquely positioned to understand what's going on here, and obviously I can sympathize with it because I live it. I do like to say, too, before I just talk about the particulars and numbers around this defund the police is that not one thing is going to absolve or solve the problems of 400 years of brutality, second-class citizenship, and pain that African Americans have felt throughout the years, and issues touch in business, in government, in healthcare. So we have to look at that from a holistic standpoint. But what I am for are absolutely investments on the front end. And that's why this year the city's budget has been cut by $3.6 million. The police budget has been cut by $3.6 million this year. We're looking at ways to make some possible other reductions. But I think that what defund the police means to me, it means different things for different people. I'm for an investment on the front end. I think that we need to make more investments in jobs and youth and in education and infrastructure and things that benefit the entire community and things that are preventative and not that causes us to intervene. We need to have things that prevent those sorts of things. So for me, that's what's important to me, making those front line investments in things like recreation centers and things like our financial empowerment centers that we launched in the city. That's important, and I'm committed to make those investments.
Should we dramatically reform the mission of police and the duties we ask them to take on?
I think we always should be looking at things that we can do. I mean, we have a blueprint, the 21st century policing policy that was put out by the president. It was shelved locally. That needs to be resurrected. There are lots of models of things that we can do to greatly improve police relations. We've done a lot here in Rochester, such as banning chokeholds, such as having police body cameras, such as launching the REAL initiative, which is related to institutional and structural racism within all of our systems, which includes police, which includes government, which includes business. All those things are important as we talk about creating a vision for policing that is effective. Policing is just one tool and one area that we need to look at, but we need to understand that historically we have to dismantle and rebuild and improve systems that have allowed systematic racism to exist for an extended and long period of time.
You think the training of police has to change? I mean, do police, and I'm not an expert here, I am trying to read as much as anybody else as all these calls for reform come out. Are police too often trained to view their jobs as kind of going into kind of battle or war?
I think some are. And I think that we need to make sure that officers are trained to understand that they are citizens of the community and that they have to be rooted in that community. Because when you feel a connection to a community, you're more likely to address the situation differently. There are police officers that I knew that I got to know growing up that lived in the community, and they could say something to me in a way that connected because I knew that they knew my family or they knew my father, and they knew what church I went to. They knew where to find me, and you knew their home telephone number. I mean, that type of connection is what is absolutely needed. The concept of community policing goes beyond just a particular unit within a police department. It must go to the entirety of the whole department, where all police departments, I think, across the country have to have a community policing mindset. And when you have that community policing mindset, what that means is that the community is placed at the center. And when the community is placed at the center, your reactions to different situations are different because you know that you are part of that larger community and you may connect with that person when you are not in uniform. And I think when we get to that area, that will help. We also need to increase the number of particularly African-American police officers across the country because there are still not enough across the country of minorities in law enforcement, and we need to find ways to be able to be able to do that as well.
Talking to Malik Evans, member of Rochester City Council. So I will make an assumption about your goals as a member of council and a member of the community regarding the health of the city, the health of the budget. My assumption is that you want to see more revenue kind of bounce back, which would mean a pretty robust business response, but also you want that to happen in a way that is safe and sound. And you heard Governor Cuomo about an hour ago mention that, yes, we are moving into phase three tomorrow. That means indoor dining with some limitations back open. That means some other businesses back open. What do you want the community to think about as we continue to move through these phases, Malik, but we have to do it in a way that is sort of logical and sound?
Please do not rock yourself back to sleep in thinking that COVID-19 has disappeared. There is no vaccine. I mean, I just saw a note from someone today that said, pray for me, I have the virus. I know people personally who have died from this virus. One of our good friends in government, Ted O'Brien, we watched what he endured over his time in dealing with COVID-19. It is still serious. It is still out there. It is still dangerous. Summer is upon us, and I know we want to celebrate and have a good time, but I'm asking people to please adhere to the guidelines related to social distancing and what is coming out of the state of New York and Monroe County Health Department. As we enter phase three, it is very important to people to still understand to wear masks. It's not a political statement. Wearing a mask is not a political statement when you're around other people. It is your freedom to do whatever it is you want to do, but if in your freedom you are impinging upon the rights of others, then that becomes a problem. So when we are asking people to wear masks when you cannot social distancing, we're not asking you to do it because we want to infringe upon your right of expression. We're asking you to do it because we want to protect other people from you where you could be asymptomatic and spread the virus. So support small businesses. Go out. Follow the things with phase three. But don't rock yourself to sleep and think that this thing is done and over. I've seen the effects of it. I know the effect personally of not being able to go to someone's funeral who I loved because we are in a COVID-19 situation and we had to social distance. So I had to watch for the first time in my life a funeral on Facebook Live. So if we want to move away from that and we want to open up the way it was last year around this time, we really need people to understand that this is serious business and it's not over. So don't rock yourself to sleep to think that it is over and that we can just go back to business as usual. We're in phase three. That means that it's not over.
Maybe you can help me understand a little bit of the culture war thing, Malik, because everything that I read indicates that obviously there's nothing that reduces risk to zero. But one of the most successful things we could do as we try to go about our business is to just get used to masking when we are in tighter spaces, when we are in public, and we may have to be in close proximity, especially if we're sitting down somewhere. And yet, you know, I mean, I think people are doing okay with it, but man, it's become part of the culture war again. Why does something like this become part of the culture war?
I think sometimes it happens because people sometimes look to people for leadership, and I think that our leaders have to be very clear that listen, this is not about. A culture war. This has got to be about, and I think Governor Larry Hogan, and put it best, and this is a Republican lawmaker from Maryland. He said, listen, this is about safety, right? This can't be about a cultural war. And I think that's the message that we have to send to people, that it's a safety. I personally, I mean, I don't like having things on my face, right? If I'm sitting at home now, I don't have a mask on. But if I was going into Wegmans and today or going into a pizza shop to pick up a pizza, I would have my mask on. Not because I like doing it, but because I have respect for my fellow citizens. And I don't know what I might be carrying. Or if I was to yawn or have a droplet, I know that mask would be there to be able to stop it. So I think we have to put facts first. And I know it's hard when to have facts when we're so divided as a country. But I think that we need people that have the respect and are in authority to continue to lead with facts. And the facts are, we know it doesn't reduce it to zero, as you said, Evan, which is a good point. But we know that it reduces the risk. So let's reduce the risk by putting on a mask when we're outside and not having parties where we're going to have 50 or 100 people. I had a huge party planned for this year because I got a milestone birthday. I was going to have over 200 people. But guess what? I had to put that on the back burner. So I had to put aside my selfish desire to have a good party and have a good time to make sure that I'm protecting the health, welfare, and safety of those that I care about. And that's what I ask people to do. Think about how you can protect the health, welfare, and safety of people that you care, that grandmother or that great-grandmother or that person that's immunocompromised that you may not know that you could affect by your actions.
I love birthdays that end in zeros, by the way. See, see, you good-looking people, you don't like wearing masks. For me, this may be permanent. This may be a permanent change. I got about 90 seconds. I'm going to have two of your colleagues on in our next hour, and we're going to talk about what we've seen in the last week with outdoor dining. Obviously, tomorrow, indoor dining becomes an option in the Rochester Finger Lakes region, but we've seen a lot of people going out to eat outside, and the question is there enough space? Are we sort of adapting as quickly as we need to as a government to say, hey, what were the regulations? Can we relax this? Do we have the space we need? Should we make these changes? How do you see that going?
I think it's a great opportunity to do it, particularly in the summer months, and I think that it would be great to include neighborhood organizations as well as business associations to see if there are days that you could shut down streets and kind of explore the outdoor dining. I'm happy about indoor opening up, but I think that our future until we get a vaccine may be more outdoor dining. So how can we reroute traffic in ways where it does not create a public safety hazard, but at the same time allow for more outdoor seating, and just not in particular neighborhoods, but broad-based across the entire county? I think that that is a great thing to be thinking about.
30 seconds. Would you go out to eat at a restaurant right now?
Possibly outside, absolutely. I've been doing a lot of takeout in terms of supporting a lot of those businesses. But I think that if I would, I can tell you that I would make sure that I socially distance if I could, and I would have a mask on until it was time for me to eat, and I would be very respectful of my server and of the other people in the restaurant.
Malik Evans, member of Rochester City Council. I know it is always a busy week, but an extraordinarily busy and challenging time as they deal with the budget and so much going on with COVID and more. Thank you for making time for the program, and I do hope to see you soon.
I hope to see you soon. Thank you, Evan.
Malik Evans joining us, and two of his colleagues will join us in our next hour as we broaden the conversation about outdoor dining. Very curious to know, listeners, if you've been out to eat, how do you like how it's going? You comfortable with it? You got questions about it? We're going to talk about it next hour on Connections.